CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. Europe, there is a clock running. Between now and when the temperatures descend, Europe must solve its energy questions, not only for the industry in Germany that needs energy from Russia, and that is not to be counted on, but also for people on fixed incomes, for the modest means people of all of Europe. Unless and until Europe answers the question, where's the natural gas coming from? It is exceedingly vulnerable, and the clock favors Moscow in the war of aggression in Ukraine. Malcolm Holein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, is with me, and we go to Brenda Schaefer of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy to help us understand where Europe can look, is looking, for alternative energy. Brenda is Senior Advisor for Energy at the Foundation. Brenda, very good evening to you. Is there an answer you hear being explored now? We know the Southern Gas Pipeline begins, but that requires, I believe, more investment to expand its capabilities. What other possibilities are there before the fall temperatures? Good evening to you, Brenda.
Good evening, John. Well, you know, first thing, I think what you said about how this is going to affect the economy, regardless of if you know, new gas sources are found, they start using more coal, this definitely has a strong potential to trigger recession in large areas of Europe. It might have already kicked in potentially in the UK, in Germany, because really many European countries are highly industrialized economies, and energy is the biggest input into manufacturing. Sometimes we think it's labor. We think a place that has cheap labor is going to have cheap goods, but actually the biggest input to manufacturing is energy. And even if the EU manages to source, you know, more LNG supplies, liquefied natural gas, that will not allow it the affordability to continue economic growth. So clearly we're going to see, recession in great parts of Europe, no matter, even if they solve, let's say, the heating and power problem. Europe is sort of looking right now at all of the above. Yesterday, the EU released a large document with their thinking on this process. And one of the issues they actually, in addition to pointing out that they will be using more coal in the future, they actually said that they hope to bring in more volumes from the Southern Gas Corridor, which you mentioned. And this project was built with double the capacity. So the physical side of it, it can ship almost, very quickly a lot more gas. But in order to prepare that gas, there needs to be gas buyers to commit in Europe, and so they really just need to make that decision to bring in more gas volumes.
So all of the above is the answer. Is there a sense of emergency, alarm? Are they watching the clock, Brenda?
That's a great question, because I think, again, we need to separate between security of supply and affordability. So they'll probably be able, they are getting in enough supplies in an urgent way to keep the lights on, to keep the homes heated, but not to keep the prices down. And I think that's sort of the worrisome area where, because we're really, talking about high national security issues, and people don't want to think that there's maybe a trade-off for supporting Ukraine and preventing recession, but it's really something we need to talk about on this side of the ocean as well.
Malcolm?
So let me ask you about the announcements today, the analysis, actually, that the U.S. is considering imposing secondary sanctions on countries that continue to buy Russian oil. The goal appears to be to undermine and destroy, diminish Russia's role in the global energy market. Is this wise? And what are the consequences for EU and Group of Seven enacting measures like this?
Right. So it's a critical question, Malcolm. I think that we need to put together with the answer to that question, also the sort of outreach to Venezuela and potentially to Iran to bring in more volume from Iran and Venezuela to substitute the Russian oil. So I think here we really, it kind of reminds me from the Bible of Samson, where Samson wants to, you know, bring down the Philistines, and he's warned, but if you bring down the pillars, you're going to die too, right? So we want to get the Philistines, or we want to address the Russia's invasion of Ukraine. But at the same time, we might be bringing down the global economy or bringing back into the fold enemies like Venezuela and Iran, which are just as dangerous, or if not more dangerous than Russia. But at the same time, I don't think we have any strategic thinking, appropriate strategic thinking about this Samson situation that we're in. Because if you look, for instance, yesterday, the White House spokeswoman, the new press officer, she used the same rhetoric that we've seen in the past couple of months of, you know, Putin's price hike. Well, the high oil price has very little to do with the invasion of Ukraine. We had, you know, sort of similar high energy prices prior to the invasion. The crisis that's happening with shortages of gasoline and diesel are not, you know, only related to the invasion. A lot of it's related to, supply shortages in the United States. And if we're going to address these problems, we have to de-link it, you know, from the Putin's price hike rhetoric, because I don't think in either side of the ocean we're really thinking out the economic consequences of what we're doing to the energy markets.
The puzzle gets more complex as we go forward, because NATO is now opposing Putin directly, but NATO is extremely vulnerable to the energy weapon. We see this because Hungary will not go along with some of the decisions that have been made about sanctions. We see this because Turkey will not go along with the invitation or the applications of Finland and Sweden. Your measure at this point, Brenda, standing back, is Europe ready to continue the war in Ukraine, or are they without a plan B and therefore we're looking not that they lost on the battlefield, but they lost in the preparation?
I think Europe, you know, on one hand, their response has been, quite impressive. You know, I think if we've had other invasions, whether it's Russian invasion of Crimea, Russian invasion of, you know, two regions of Georgia, invasion of Azerbaijan through Russia's proxy and through, you know, with Russian support and participation with Armenia occupying extensive areas of Azerbaijan. We haven't seen much response in Europe, and this time it's different. But on the other hand, you know, including even the two of the examples you gave, you know, Hungary is a landlocked country. So it's very easy for someone to sit in France and Italy and have lots of access to ports and say, no, well, you shouldn't, you know, use this oil when, you know, basically you're landlocked, your options are very limited. Or sure, Turkey has concerns about Sweden's relationship with the PKK and harboring of PKK fighters. But Turkey's taken the state of, you know, closing the Turkish Strait, so the Bosphorus, you know, probably even a more practically important move than, you know, Sweden and Finland joining NATO in terms of this conflict. So I think it is a lot more complicated with the various security needs of different countries.
Malcolm?
So let me ask you, in terms of Israel's best options now, politically and logistically, they want to get more natural gas to Europe. Is it through Egypt? Is there a chance to resurrect the East Med pipeline in some form? Is a new pipeline, floating LNG facility? What do you see as the next step, assuming also the gas prices stay high and supply limited?
Yeah. Well, first thing, I think that Israel's response now, at least it's good that it's kind of incentivizing it to go back to take an interest in exploration and export, because for a while this government was kind of freezing, you know, new licensing round and thing, you know, very impressed with words from John Kerry and that on climate change, as if, you know, in this current, as if even if Israel went down to zero emissions, it would have zero impact on, you know, on any global developments. But one, I think it's incentivized Israel to go back to thinking about, you know, increasing production. I think the only viable major export way to bring to Europe would be actually through the Southern Gas Corridor, joining it in Turkey, because that pipeline already it physically exists and reaches Italy. And permitting in Europe and investments in energy infrastructure in Europe is so difficult. It's hard really to imagine a completely new pipeline option having any sort of commercial viability or even public viability, with Europe being very mixed on how they feel about, you know, new gas imports, needing them on the other hand, not really large parts of their public, you know, opposing new gas imports. So I think only something like the Southern Gas Corridor, which reaches Italy, you know, that actually exists with Israel, you know, joining this with a different portion in Turkey. I think it's probably the only commercially viable for large export to Europe.
Brenda Schaefer, professor, is a senior advisor for energy at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, as well as a non-resident senior fellow at the Atlantic Council, Malcolm Honlein Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.